What do the plagues in the book of Exodus say about God and Egyptian culture? That's what we're going to discuss in today's episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thanks for joining us. This is the second in a mini-series that we're doing with David Renfro. Let's go right to today's discussion with David and Sean. Here's Grace in Focus.
Welcome to Grace in Focus Radio. My name is Sean Lazar, and I'm here with David Renfro, who's writing a commentary on the book of Exodus. Hi, David.
Hi.
Well, last episode, we were talking about the 10 plagues of Egypt, which we all know from the movies, we all know from Sunday school stories. But do we really know the purpose of them, the theological meaning of these plagues? What do they tell us about God? What do they tell us about Egyptian society? Mm-hmm. In the last episode, we discussed three of the plagues. And I'd like to continue our discussion here with the third plague, lice and flies. David, can you summarize for us what we've learned so far?
Sure. The first couple of plagues emphasize that Yahweh, the God of the Israelites, is the only God that supports life. Like we talked about last time, the Nile flood, it brought down sediment, which is essentially fertilizer for their crops. So he's the sustainer of life. And therefore, he's the Lord over that. He is absolutely sovereign. Just a note, the first 24 chapters of Exodus is absolute requirement for every New Testament believer to study. I don't know of another passage that, in creative but also very substantial ways, teaches about God's absolute sovereignty. And I think that's a message that the New Testament church needs desperately these days.
Oh, absolutely. Because the Egyptians, like you were saying in the last episode, they worshiped dozens, if not hundreds, of gods.
Right.
And they thought of different elements of nature as being gods. Like you were saying, they thought the River Nile was a life-giving god.
Right.
And when the real God, Yahweh, the Lord, turned that river into blood, he showed his supremacy over the Nile.
He's the life sustainer, not the Nile. The Nile is just a river.
Right.
Not a god. It doesn't have magical powers. There's nothing mystical about a river.
Right.
You know, it's controlled by the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And the Egyptian magicians in Pharaoh's employ, they were helpless to stop these plagues.
They right. were able to reproduce a couple of them.
Right.
But most of the other plagues, they were like, sorry, Pharaoh, can't do a thing about it. And each one of them is different, but each one of them also shows an aspect of the Lord's character and also what he is arguing against. If you want to use a theological term, it's a polemic.
This is showing the truth of biblical or Jewish religion over the falsity of these Egyptian religions.
Let me say it another way that yeah. I've said it in some of my sermons. My God can beat up your God.
That's right. That's what these show.
And really, if you think about it, that's what's going on.
Right.
He's showing the absolute insufficiency of these Egyptian gods and goddesses and showing his full sufficiency in every aspect of the universe.
Well, give us some examples here. So the fourth plague, flies. Why mm-hmm. flies?
Flies were the scourge of the ancient Near East. What he's doing here is essentially making everybody's life miserable. Mm-hmm. What he's also showing is it's not just a fly infestation that was normal during certain times in the ancient Near East. This was a humdinger, as
right.
we say in the South.
Yeah.
This one was overwhelmingly intense.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, the Egyptians could do nothing to prevent it, first of all, and to get rid of them.
And it seems like in chapter 8, during this plague, Pharaoh is willing to let them go, it seems like, at some point. Then his heart hardens, and then he refuses?
Yeah. There's times when the plague is so intense, and not only that, he gets bad PR from his people
right.
around him. Pharaoh, you got to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And he just has to do something. But then it literally says, and this is a whole nother discussion, the hardening of Pharaoh's heart.
Mm-hmm.
There are some times where it says God hardens his heart. There's other times where it says he hardens his own heart.
That's right.
That's an interesting study all by itself. The interesting thing about the flies is, the other thing that I saw is that the people, the Egyptians, Israelites, no one could control a fly infestation.
Mm-hmm.
Who can tell a fly, don't land there, land someplace else?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen.
Right.
But it does say in this passage that after Moses entreated the Lord, what does it say? It says that the flies went away.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? That
right.
God can control the flies to say, it's time for you to go now.
Right.
And they left Egypt.
Right.
And that's once again trying to show God's absolute sovereignty and lordship over natural processes.
Right.
Things normally you would think nobody has any control over.
Right.
But you can see from these plagues that he's the Lord of nature.
Right.
Just as he was the Lord of the life-sustaining, he was the Lord of nature in these plagues.
Right. So we have livestock that get diseased. We have people who are men and beast covered in boils.
Very painful and a very personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the flies were a nuisance. Boils are painful.
Right.
The disease on the livestock. Understand that in the ancient Near East, livestock was wealth, not your bank account.
Right.
When all the livestock were diseased, that is a huge hit on the economy.
Interesting. Interesting.
So not only is he destroying the worship of Egyptians' gods and goddesses, he's destroying Egypt's economy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing about this, and it's very clear in this passage, if you read it on the diseased livestock, no livestock that was in the area that Israel lived was affected by it.
Interesting.
So who can control where a livestock disease can go and where it cannot go?
Right.
Can any Egyptian god or goddess control any of that? I think we know the answer to that.
Right.
Only the God of the creation, who is sovereign over every process of his creation, can say the disease can go here, but it cannot go there.
Right.
That was a huge thing. Can you imagine being Pharaoh, seeing that all of a sudden Egyptian cattle are dying, but Israelite cattle are just fine?
Right.
In the same area of Egypt.
What powerful evidence for the truth of what Moses was saying.
You would think that'd be enough for Pharaoh.
But was it?
Not even close.
Not even close. Because several more plagues had to come to pass, such as hail.
Mm-hmm.
Locusts,
mm-hmm.
Darkness. What does darkness signify? Why was that important?
Well, it was especially significant in Egypt because the only darkness that they pretty much ever saw was, you know, it's a very desert environment. And the only time they ever saw any darkness was at night or, as they saw with the plague of hail earlier, dark clouds,
right.
Thunderstorms. And see, that's another thing. Almost every civilization in the ancient Near East worship the god of thunder.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when Israel gets to the promised land, there's another god of thunder in the Canaanites. His name was Baal.
Baal, right.
He's the god of thunder to the Canaanites. So this is a very common theme in the ancient Near East. The Egyptians were all over it too. So the idea of this intense darkness, I mean, literally you couldn't see your hand in front of your face kind of mm-hmm. darkness, not only would restrict their activities, be able to walk around and do the normal things that you could do, even at night. At least you may have moonlight, or because of the clear air back then, some starlight would help some. They had none of that.
Right.
Add to that the idea of another result of absolute darkness, fear.
Right, absolutely.
Once again, the Lord is showing that he's in control of even the most powerful natural process,
right,
that of sunlight and darkness.
From the smallest fly, the smallest little lice,
mm-hmm.
to the sun and the moon and just light and dark.
He controls it all.
All right, last plague, and we're going to have to summarize this,
mm-hmm.
the death of the firstborn. Now, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, I
Absolutely.
Guess. Tell us about that.
Well, this is another one I think is fascinating because, and I see grace in here, because he only took the firstborn.
Mm.
He didn't take all the sons or daughters. First of all, I see it as a picture to the Israelites because the firstborn plays a huge role in worship and in just the culture of Israel after they left Egypt. But also, remember, if Pharaoh is a god, his son is a god too.
Oh, interesting.
So God was telling the Egyptians, Pharaoh in particular, that neither Pharaoh nor his son was a god, that the God of Israel is in control. You are completely powerless in this. And that's what he wanted to do, was to bring them to the point of saying, I am absolutely powerless in all of this.
All right, let's end with a takeaway. David, how is this a comfort to believers today?
Well, first of all, I think the sovereignty of God is a doctrine that I hear preached and taught in churches very seldom. I don't know why. Maybe we don't like it, or it gives us other problems. But it's clearly taught almost in every page of the Bible that he is absolutely sovereign. I find great comfort in that, because the success or failure of something is not all on me.
Mm-hmm.
That I can go to the Lord, and if something doesn't work out the way I want, there's a reason. I don't know the reason. It may upset me that I don't know the reason, but there's a reason for it all. And I can be comforted that God knows what he's doing, and that plan that he has is a loving plan. I don't see it now, but I've heard too many people that are older in their faith, they look back and say, man, I'm glad that didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was upsetting at the time.
That's right.
So I think belief in God's absolute sovereignty is one of the most comforting doctrines in the Bible.
Isn't it a comfort to know that the God we serve is in control of everything, from the smallest fly to the largest river, to the sun and the moon that governs day and night? And that means God is sovereign over every area of your life. And you can know that you have a loving Creator God looking out over you. Isn't that an amazing thought?
We've seen throughout the other plagues that he is the Lord of nature. He is the Lord of sustaining of life. I think this last plague of death is he is the Lord of life and death. He is the Lord of health and sickness. He is the Lord of nature. And I think all through these plagues, you see God's absolute sovereignty over every aspect of his creation. And no other God can even come close to that. So why would we allow some other God, if you will, put it in quotes, to control our lives as Bible-believing Christians? Why would we allow that when there's only one that is absolute Lord of all those processes? Amen.
Thank you guys for that great discussion on the Exodus plagues. Maybe you'd like to go deeper on the subjects that we cover in this show. We would love for you to come visit us at our website, faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. On our site, we have free magazine subscription. We have teaching videos, podcasts, blog posts, all kinds of free materials that are designed to help you grow and mature in your understanding of Scripture and faith. So come visit us at faithalone.org, faithalone.org. This show and all of our ministries are made possible from the generous donations of listeners just like you. I hope that you might consider becoming a financial partner with the Grace Evangelical Society. If so, you can find out how on faithalone.org. We love to hear from listeners just like you. Maybe you've got a question or a comment or some feedback. If you do, we want to hear from you. So here's our email address. It's radio@faithalone.org. radio@faithalone.org. Next time on the program, we're going to do one of my favorite things, which is a question and answer episode. So tune in for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.